Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done everything. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
All right, welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. It is Wednesday, and we almost threw down before the show because it is 100% Laurel.
Yanny.
It is not Yanny. It is Laurel. And I don't know if you – like, I just sent a tweet. If you hear Yanny, just unfollow me on Twitter. I don't want to
I really
you.
Thought you were trolling me this morning because I couldn't hear anything other than Yanny. Like, there's no L in that.
So I won't lose 50%. I will lose 33%, right?
Wait, 43%. 43.
Because 57% of people hear Laurel.
That's incredible
other,
to me.
It doesn't matter. It's so close to 50. It doesn't matter.
That's just a certain demographic, though. That's not representative of...
No, that's the whole world.
There were a billion people
who were interviewed.
I heard Laurel yesterday. I heard Yanny today. So really, my whole life is a lie. I don't know what to do now.
All right. Well, so whatever you hear, you're going to be right because I guess there is no right or wrong answer for that one. But
Let's do a Twitter poll.
All right, we'll put it out there. Debo, put it on there at Cannell and Bell on Twitter. We'll get a poll going. All right, we have a huge show for you. We're going to do a lot of NBA. We had the lottery, the playoffs. We're going to do some like it, love it, or hate it. And does it move the needle? All right, let's dive into it because we saw the Celtics-Cavs last night. Everybody, LeBron wasn't worried.
Yeah,
he said, hey, it's going to be fine. But I think it's time to panic a little bit in Cleveland. I know I don't like overreacting to situations, but they get beat 107-94. LeBron goes off. You could tell from the get-go as he dropped 21 in the first quarter that he was on a mission. He was going to say, I'm going to put this team on my back. They actually got a pretty good contribution from Kevin Love as he had 22 and 15. But it was not enough against a team that is just flat out more talented than they are.
They're just better. They're better, not from top to bottom, but from second player down. Because I think Al Horford is better than Kevin Love at this point. Kevin Love did play well, and I'm going to give him credit where credit's due. Like, he did his job. But when the rest of your starting lineup, you're talking about Tristan Thompson, George Hill, and J.R. Smith combined for, 11? J.R. Smith was 0 for 7. You're past your expiration date, bro. Like, that roster, I look at the Cavs roster, and they're just past their expiration date. Kevin Love included. Now, he still does his job, but a job well done by him, it isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And LeBron came out, and I said that for that team to have a chance, he had to act like the best player on the floor. He didn't have to score 50, but he had to act like it. He acted like it last night.
Yep.
He came out and let his team know that he was there. You know, he was gonna lead the charge, and let's take this back to Cleveland. And he had nobody with him except Kevin Love. And you know, when I watch Boston play, they're quicker, they're more aggressive, they're a little hungrier than Cleveland. They're much better. And I was watching with my wife, who was a soccer player, so she doesn't really. You know, she loves basketball, and she watched me play and watches our boys. But like, I was trying to tell her, like, soccer players sometimes, they have guys that are specifically, or girls, or women that are specifically goal scorers. They're strikers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so they get served the ball, and they just finish. And she was a finisher. Like, she just caught it and had a knack for putting it in the basket. Cleveland's got a lot of guys like that, like, where they have to be served. They don't make plays. They don't create anything. And Boston has a bunch of guys that can create. And so what Cleveland winds up looking like is LeBron with the ball trying to make a play. If he doesn't get it to Kyle Korver or J.R. Smith or Jeff Green in a situation or Tristan where they can just catch it and finish it, it's got to come right back to LeBron, and he's got to go to work all over again to try to create something for every other person on the court. It's got to be exhausting for him. And conversely, Boston, whoever gets that ball off the rim, i.e. right there, Jaylen Brown off the rim, four Cavs back in defensive transition, and he beats them all to the rack. He can create, and it puts a lot of pressure on that Cleveland defense. They can't guard anybody. They've just got a bunch of players past their expiration date, and I did not see it. I thought at the trade deadline, getting the pieces like Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, and Larry Nance would help infuse that team with some youth and some energy. Maybe they're just not good enough. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're too young. Maybe the jury's still out on them. But the guys that have been there, like J.R. Smith, I love JR. Like, I thought he was a good pickup when we got him a few years ago. Like, that's 0 for 7, inexcusable of starting 2 or 3 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, these guys are past their expiration date, and they're getting exposed by Boston right now.
I'm going to be real curious to see what happens when they go back to Cleveland, because I thought there was some serious tension on the court last night during the game. I thought you said a lot of frustration. Yeah. And I remember saying this when the trade was made, and they had the two games before the All-Star break, and they would look great. And everybody's like, oh, this is awesome. We love it. We have this. It's great playing with LeBron. He's the best player in the world. And I said, well, let's see how they do when they face some adversity, because this will really be the first gut check they've had. Even against Indiana, they still split the first two, and it was a good series, but it never felt like this point of desperation where they were looking around like there was some eye rolling. They were giving guys. It was just ugly. And then you saw J.R. Smith with a cheap shot against Al Horford, which I thought was totally uncalled for. You get guys hurt like that. And I thought that was a frustrating foul at the end of the game. I think I'm really curious to see what Cleveland does emotionally, effort-wise, when they get back to Cleveland.
So LeBron is typically known for game twos and coming back really strong, right? What was it that he was really missing in this game? Or were you watching
help.
It and were you thinking that he needed to put in more effort?
Everybody else. LeBron was fantastic. You know, I do think that him getting hit in the face, it took something away from the steam that he had building. Like, he was like a locomotive, and then when he came back, you could tell that his you know, your rhythm gets thrown off just a little bit, and it changes who you are on the court. That hurt. But by and large, I thought he was great. He had no help. Kevin Love did what Kevin Love could do. Just about as well as you could hope Kevin Love could do it. And it's just, you have to have more people helping. And I think they'll be okay in game three. The problem is this, though. Like, you're going to get a better J.R. Smith at home. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a better, you know, you'll get a better probably Tristan and maybe whoever else those role guys are, Rodney Hood. Those guys go home. It's a lot easier in the playoffs to play at home with that crowd support. So they'll be better. What really is concerning for me when I watch them is the Cavs quit. And in the NBA in general is kind of like this now. Like, you either get blown out by a lot or you win by a lot, right? Like, and so, like, the Cavs, when they go down like 15 or 16, it usually like spirals out of control. It's like a wrap kind of for them, right? Like, they pack it in, we'll come out the next night. Like, Boston took a blow to the chin last night. They were down 11. LeBron scored 21 in the first half. And those cats, like, stood right up in there and went toe-to-toe. Like, that shows me a level of zero fear. And part of the LeBrons, the Tigers, the MJs, there's a fear factor associated with those guys. Kobe, if you don't have fear, you can accomplish something. Boston is not afraid.
Four times this season, they've come back from 20 down.
They're remarkable. A lot of NBA teams, I don't know what the stats are. I would love to see them in, like, the blowout situation in the NBA is more so than it's ever been, probably because of the three ball, and if you miss threes, you wind up down by like 20 points. But people get blown out, and they kind of pack it in.
And guys rest, yeah, for sure.
The C's don't do that. They keep scrapping. There's a level of like heart there that is really endearing for a guy who kind of played like that. What really concerned me also about the Cavs, and I alluded to it just a little bit, was – first of all, they can't keep anybody in front of them. It was a problem in the Indiana series with Victor Oladipo, and they would spread him out, and they just can't stop the ball at the point of attack. It puts a ton of pressure on the interior of your defense, and then they can kick it out, and guys start hitting three. So Boston's tearing them up. But in transition, right, there were multiple plays where a Celtic got the ball off the rim. And I wish I had a chart. I wish I was like Kenny the Jet. Oh, yeah. I could show it. But when you have like four Cleveland players – that are closer to the Celtics basket than the Celtics player who rebounded the ball, it's unforgivable that that Celtics player puts it on the floor and is able to beat your whole team down there for a layup. He's got to bring the ball with him. All you got to do is turn around, sprint back, and turn around. There were multiple plays like that where the Cavs body, you could call it body language, you can call it.
Do you think it's flat-out speed, though? Do you think the younger Celtics team is
not
faster?
Listen, if I put you in a 94-foot foot race, like with a really fast Terry Rozier, it's only 94 feet. So there's only so far in front of me that you can get. We're not talking about a 400-meter race.
Right.
So what I'm saying is if you had a little bit of hustle or grit to yourself, yeah, they're faster than you, but you should be able to get your butt back there and get in front of the ball. And we should be able to get three or four sets of eyes back there. And they're not doing that. So they just – not only is Boston better, but they're hungrier, they're tougher, and they seem to want it more.
All right, so the Cavs are favored by 6 going back to Cleveland when they face Celtics there. So that makes sense. I think most people think they're going to get it. I'm concerned about them. I don't think it's time to panic because they say, hey, it's not a series until you lose one at home. So we're still on the home court advantage. I'm switching my pick. I thought the Cavs were going to win. I think the Celtics are going to win.
94%. Like if you're 0-2, the team that goes up 2-0 wins 94% of the time. LeBron is a 6 percenter. I'll give you that. I will give you that. But I am not worried. It's not LeBron right now. This has nothing to do with LeBron. This has everything to do with J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, George Hill. The Cavs have a – these are all guys. When I was in Cleveland and I was in the front office, and I don't mean to over – like just take this segment over, but when we were targeting, when I was with David Griffin and Kobe Altman, the current GM, these were all guys, George Hill, J.R. Smith, Jeff Green. These are guys that we targeted back then. This was, what, 3-4 years ago now? Like, they would have been great then. They're past their expiration date. They can't keep up with the Celtics.
All right, let's move out west. Game two is tonight. Game one was pretty much, I thought, went as scripted. I think the Warriors are just a flat-out better team. And then I look at it, and I'm thinking, all right, the Rockets got what they want, got what they needed out of James Harden offensively.
Yeah.
Chris Paul had a pretty decent game. Steph Curry was off, and you still got run. I have not changed my mind at all about this one. I think the Warriors are just a flat-out better team with the four superstars.
You may be right. You may be right.
Well, what do you do if you're Mike D'Antoni and you see that performance where there were several possessions where you actually had shot clock violations on the Houston Rockets, who are not afraid to shoot?
See, I think Houston, here's the deal with Mike's offense. There's a fine line. There's a really fine line you walk between being exactly what you want to be offensively, which is shooting in the first two quadrants of the shot clock, like getting it up in the first 12 seconds, going ISO, finding that mismatch, which you saw them do. They searched. They ran pick and roll multiple times at the top of the key to get Steph Curry, and then they wanted to go ISO. You could tell that they were going to attack that. There's a fine line between doing that efficiently and then falling out of flow offensively because it takes you too long and it turns into just a complete grind of an ISO game. And while James Harden scored a bunch of points, right, 14 for 24, 41, right?
He
had 25 points in isolation. There were 15 ISO plays that James Harden ran in that game. That's way too many. And I know Mike's going to say that you want to run ISO plays, so maybe too many is not the right way to put it. It took too long to develop. So if you're going to get the ISO you like and you go quickly, let's go. Mm-hmm. But they just waited too long. You were down at the end of a shot clock. That offense is not performing at optimal level, and that's what I was worried about with them and Golden State. That offense can work. It can be very frustrating to guard for Golden State, but it has to be done quick and with pace. It can't become an ISO show for James Harden at the top of the key and Chris Paul. Golden State is too good for that.
So the Rockets ran 45 ISO plays. That was the most of any team in the last 5 years, playoffs or regular season. And Mike D'Antoni, he said after,
like,
I'm not
going to
change.
That.
Yeah, he did. He's like, that's what we want to do. Now you've got Eric Gordon says otherwise, says a little bit, we need to do something differently. Do you think there's a problem with the message?
No. Yeah, well, here's the problem. And I've said it before about Mike. So Mike's philosophy, I read an article on Mike about he wants to empower players because he had a coach who empowered him I forget exactly where he was in Europe, but in an effort to do that, like, I would go in and say, hey, man, Mike, you know, Leandro Barbosa, man, he's got to pass that ball, man. I'm open in the corner. He's got to pass it. And he's like, yeah, he probably should have passed it. But I don't want to tell LB to pass that because
admit that to you?
He would say that.
Yeah.
He would say, because I don't want to screw up his mind. I want him free. I want him confident. I want him gunslinging. And I respected that because he did the same thing for me. So where, yes, Mike may know fully that James Harden had way too many ISOs and it took him too long to develop, he's not going to admit that to the media or to James Harden because he doesn't want to mess James's head up. He says it. Like, he wants James and Chris Paul to play against lesser players in practice because he wants them to feel like they are the kings of the jungle. Like, he wants no doubt in their mind. So that's the only thing about Mike's system. Like, if it falls out of whack just a little bit, he is so intent on having players not be in their own head that he's probably not going to hop in there and fix it with a heavy hand. And that was just, I agree with Eric Gordon, way too much ISO. And here's what was interesting to me. James Harden comes out and says, I can't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. We need everybody to be at their top play, which I'll get into the grammatics of that. Like, we can do that later. Yeah. But like, you can't do that when you monopolize the ball. Like, it's the Allen Iverson thing. And I said, like, you can't ask me to make a jump shot with 2 seconds on the clock when you handled it for 20. You can't do that. And right. So, you know, Eric Gordon coming out and saying that, James Harden coming out and saying this, there's something not right there in Houston offensively.
So we spent a lot of time talking about offense. I don't think offense is their problem. I think it's on the defensive side of the ball. Like, who do they have that can match up against Durant? Because Durant goes 37. He was, 14 of 27. He had 27 of those 37 points. in isolation himself, like, I don't know what you do.
Well, here's the, I mean, I don't know what you do either. Yeah, you try to double him, but they've got shooters all over the place. That's the difference, right? Kevin Durant came out, and Golden State essentially went ISO for ISO with Houston. Golden State just did it efficiently and quickly. When Kevin Durant caught the ball, he had it for less than a second and a half. Like, he was up into a shot, into his move, and he's 6'11",
right.
Like, and he shoots the ball fading away. There's not a lot you're going to be able to do with that. But the key to what he did was he didn't wait. He got his mismatch. He saw what he liked, and he went after it. He didn't sit there and dance. So it becomes even harder to guard when you just make your mind up and you go to work.
So Durant, after the game, this is kind of rubbing salt in the wound. He said they haven't even reached their peak yet. Well, and I guess when you watch it, you're like, well, Steph didn't have a good night. So I guess the peak is all of them on fire together, I guess.
Yeah. And Steph didn't have a bad game, 8 for 15. Yeah, he's 1 for 5 from the three. But
he didn't look like himself. Like, people were saying, oh, something's wrong with him. So maybe he's still having injuries.
You know when they're at their best? When Kevin Durant doesn't do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
When it doesn't become Kevin Durant ISO that much. When that ball is free-flowing, and to your point, all of them are hitting, and they all wind up with 25, 26, like, that's when they're at their best. So to his point, yeah, they could be better than that. Their offense could click better. I mean, Kevin Durant was fantastic, but offensively, their flow wasn't fantastic.
All right, I love watching NBA playoffs. You know what I don't love watching? The NBA lottery show. That was some of the worst television I think I have ever seen.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's the broadcast network's fault that put it on,
right?
Because I don't think it was the best produced show, but it's also, to me, it's boring to see them go ahead and introduce some representative from each team. Although Jamie Gertz, the actress, was there representing the Atlanta Hawks. She's married to their principal owner.
Right.
They thought she was going to bring some good luck. I guess she was like, they got what they thought they were going to get, right? Like, they didn't get surprised with the number one pick.
Right.
But they still did all right. They got the third pick. So let's do a little like it, love it, or hate it. So you know I already, on the broadcast itself, I hate it. But let's go in some like it, love it, or hate it on some of these players and stuff that happened. All right, Luka Doncic as the best fit for the Suns at number one overall. Like it, love it, or hate it?
I like it. I can't love it nor hate it just because I don't know. I know he's got that relationship with Igor Koskakov. I know he's a 6'8 playmaker that's played with grown men for a long time in Europe. So you can drop him in right now, and he's relatively ready to go. DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley Jr., like, they're still babies. They will have more, you know, they probably have some more physical gifts, if you will, than Luka Doncic. But I think I like it just because I don't know enough about it. And the Suns just desperately have to get this right. Like, they really need to. It's a gift, but it could be a curse if you screw it up. Like, get it right, Suns.
Don't you think, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I was when they hired Igor, thinking, all right, maybe it makes sense. Like, you connect the dots. They're going to start to plan and get Doncic in there because he's familiar with him. I wasn't aware that he played when he was 13. You can do this. Signed with Real Madrid or some NBA. It was Real Madrid.
Yep.
Signed with him at 13. Then was like basically a professional from the time he was 13. So he's obviously had a lot of preparation for this moment. But anytime you take a Euro, there's still a little bit of doubt in there that creeps in. How does he handle, you know, the physicality and the athleticism in the NBA?
That's always going to be a question. As far as the Suns roster goes, you have Devin Booker, you have Josh Jackson, and
Brandon Knight, Tyler Ulis.
Right.
Bender and Chris, some young guys.
Right, but I'm trying to figure out Luka, whether he translates into a point or he translates into like a 2-3 that does a lot of ball handling. And admittedly,
I think they'd have the option to have two ball handlers, which a lot of teams are going to, and have the option for Booker and Doncic to start in that backcourt and kind of trade off.
That could be really interesting. And to the point we made earlier about, like, you need guys that can create now. The NBA is about creating and shot making. And so, yeah, it could be interesting connection there.
All right, next up, like it, love it, or hate it. The Kings will land a franchise changer that they've been seeking since dealing DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, I can't. It's impossible to love it.
Right.
Because
right.
You just, I mean, you don't know. I like it. I'm not going to hate it. I think the odds, you know, who are their last?
So, Debo, this is through the draft or is this through free agency?
It's not going to be
through the draft.
That's what I was going to say.
The number two overall pick, just something they haven't had.
So,
being bad for a while and never getting that super high pick.
Here's their top 10 picks since Boogie, who went number 5 in 2010. Thomas Robinson, number 5. Ben McLemore, number 7. Nick Stauskas went 8. Willie Cauley-Stein, and De'Aaron Fox. Jury's still out on both of those. So I can't say that I hate it, but I can't say that I love it because their history is just pretty much what the draft is. It's like hit or miss. I'm going to say like it because, look, Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, I really feel like those two, if you're going to get one of those two, you should be good. You should be fine. Whichever one you wind up getting, whichever one the Suns leave on the table, you should be good. So I'm going to say like it.
All right. I like it too because I think there's probably odds there. Like in the NFL, when it's 50-50 on whether you hit, it's probably the same.
Right.
Like there's probably a 50-50 chance whether they get a franchise player or not. All right. Let's keep it rolling. Like it, love it, or hate it. The Yankees Nationals played last night. That is a world. That is your World Series preview. Like it, love it, or hate it.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. The Yankees, obviously, have hit a stride as of late. They're first in the American League in runs scored, eighth in average. Pitching is third in ERA. So I like the Yankees. The Nationals for me are an interesting thing, and I'm gonna pull for them just because of like the proximity. Like I like the New York Washington thing. I like the Nats have been like knocking on the door for a while now, so I like them to get over the hump. Like I could go through, they're third in the National League ERA too, and they're they got Bryce Harper, they're fourth in runs scored. So I'm gonna say yes just because I don't know baseball like that, but I'm pulling for the Nats and I like the Yanks.
I love it. I love the Yanks. That's my team. I want to see them. They're playing like the best team right now in baseball. You can make a really strong case that Houston's gonna be right back there too.
Yeah.
I think the American League Championship Series is gonna be insane. When I look at the National League, I'd probably say let's go. I like the star power too. Like let's get Bryce Harper up there. Let's finally get this team to get through their playoff hurdles. The star power that would be involved too with these two teams, the markets, it would be good for baseball. So I'm all down for it. I would love to see it happen. All right, like it, love it, or hate it. There was other baseball news. So Robinson Cano got popped for 80 games without pay for testing positive for banned substance. So he tested positive for the diuretic furosemide. Furosemide.
All right.
I'll go with that. Just say it with confidence and nobody will know. So his quote after, and they always have an excuse, as Justin Verlander pointed out on Twitter, because as soon as the news came out, he said, 3, 2, 1, get the excuse ready. This is Cano's quote. Recently, I learned that I tested positive for a substance called furosemide.
Furosemide.
We'll add a couple of syllables in there. Which is not a performance-enhancing substance. For more than 15 years, playing professional baseball has been the greatest honor and privilege of my life. I would never do anything to cheat the rules of the game. Of course not. And after undergoing dozens of drug tests over more than a decade, I've never tested positive for performance-enhancing substance for the simple reason I've never taken one. That's a bunch of BS. He absolutely did it. If you listen to the MLB, they do not give out positive test punishments like this unless it is pretty locked down and they have it. They have to provide proof that he intended to use it as a masking agent. They already did that. That's why there was no appeal already. It's going to happen. He's going to start serving his suspension today. I think this is just kind of the part of the baseball cloud that's hanging over it. It didn't surprise me at all. He's 35. He's getting up there. He's trying to extend his career. It wasn't a surprise shocker to me, so I hate his excuse.
This is for the excuse. Do I like it, love it, or hate it?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I guess ultimately I don't care because we've talked about this before. How much did Robinson Cano sign for when he signed? He went to Seattle, right? When he signed that big deal with the Yankees.
200, I believe.
Yeah.
So if performing enhancing like drugs are going to get me 200 and change, and I'm going to get popped for them at some point and only lose 80 games worth of pay, I'm in.
Yep.
I don't know how else to say
it. I'm with you.
I'm all the way in. Yep. And so eventually this was going to happen. It's happening now. Like I'm not even apologizing.
Vacation.
Let me name you 10 other players that have done it. I did it too. Sorry. Bye.
Exactly.
I do feel bad for Seattle though because they have the longest playoff drought ever. Now that the Bills made it to postseason, they have the longest playoff drought.
I agree, but I feel like if you're an MLB team, and I'm with you, Hannah, but if you're an MLB team, like you've got to just look when you're signing a free agent, I'm got to pencil that in as part of like, and if I'm going to have him for 5 years and he's that good of a player, let's pencil in like 90 games where I'm not going to have him because of some kind of substance thing.
Try this. 10 years, $240 million.
Yeah,
baseball, I talked to Jim Bowden, actually, who actually does stuff.
I'm in.
Right, exactly. I'll do whatever you want to do.
Here.
So I talked to Jim Bowden about this, and he said, well, this is proof that Major League Baseball's drug policy is working. I have a problem with that statement because I think it's still going on. I think players are going to see doctors who are experimenting with drugs that baseball doesn't even test for. So I would say that players are always going to try to skirt the system. The other thing, if you truly wanted guys to be scared of testing positive, void the contracts.
Yeah, get them.
Void the guaranteed money that is there, because it is guaranteed. 100% of that $200 million is guaranteed for him. If you said, if you test positive, you will void it, they wouldn't do it. Because there's only the threat of a suspension, and it's going to be a drop in the bucket compared to that $200 million, they're going to do it all
day
long.
That's crazy. Even some of the guys that you wouldn't think would do it, like D. Gordon, his teammate, is like this little guy, and he, when he was with the Marlins, he had the same thing. So it's just so interesting
to me. And guys do it for different reasons, because like when I played minor league baseball, it was before the 2003, like when they all get up there in front of Congress, and they basically was the big coming, like they busted Major League Baseball. It was prevalent. It was all over the place. Guys were like asking, hey, can you come shoot me up after, you know, batting practice?
Yeah.
And the thing I was surprised at, but to Hannah's point, is a lot of these guys I looked at, I'm like, well, they're not shredded. They're not big. Some of the guys looked skinny fat.
Right.
You know, like we were talking about the other day. They look skinny fat. But the reason a lot of them did it is because of injury. Because we had a stretch where we played like 21 days in a row. Mm-hmm. So they get little nicks. They get a hamstring, a groin. They take something. They can get through it faster. And so it's not always like you picture this big Herculean guy who's just it's the guys oftentimes you don't think it would be. So baseball's still just gonna have that problem for a long time. They're always gonna be trying to eradicate it, but I don't think they ever completely get PEDs out of the game. All right, let's move on to another segment. We call this Move the Needle. Ooh. So what does it do for you? Does it pique your interest at all? Or is it something you just kind of read the headline and move on? All right. Big announcement from the Supreme Court earlier this week. They ruled in favor of 6-3 in favor of New Jersey, ruling that the restriction on sports gambling is unconstitutional. So basically, you're going to be able to gamble on NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. There's some...
Cricket.
What? Cricket, other professional sports.
Yeah.
There is some discussion about what will happen with college sports. I think it's going to vary by state. New Jersey said they will not allow college sports, which I'm glad they're at least taking that step. Does it move the needle for you, sports gambling?
Yeah, because maybe now, like, if it's more easily accessible, I might dip my toe. Like, I might. Like, yeah. I've never really gambled on a sport, but if I don't have to, like, go through an account in Vegas and
trying to hook you up for 6 months.
Right, exactly.
But, like, it moves the needle for me because it's going to move the needle for you guys, and I might get involved to some degree, right? Like, I heard some lines coming in where, like, if I could have bet Golden State, I guess Golden State was, like, 170 to like, one or something. Like, there was value in it to me, like, listening on the radio this morning.
Right, I was close.
Well, something, right? Like,
we'll get you up to speed. So, I have
What would it have been? I would have had to bet... What would the line be if I had to bet, like, $5,000 to make $2,500? That's what?
Minus 250.
So it was like that. That was the line. So things like that I hear, but it's never been accessible. So I think it moves the needle a little bit. New Jersey said they're going to start like Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
They're
already
ready to go.
Oh, yeah. They're ready to go. Monmouth Park. Go down the racetrack and start betting on sports.
Yes, sir.
So you've dipped your toe in the water. I jumped in the deep end a long time ago. So much so. And see, this is where I think it moves the needle. So a couple reasons. One, it'll be a lot easier to get my cash, as I've had a really hard time. I had to open a Bitcoin account to get my Patrick Reed payoff from the Masters. Yeah, that's always fun, watching that thing go up 5% every single day. But I also think it's going to change things just dynamically, dramatically, whatever way we want it, of the way we view sports. Like, when you go to a game, I think there's a couple things, from the viewing experience at the game, but also from your couch sitting at home. So I think when you go to the game, I think it's going to be crazy to think that you could go either across the street or at the ticket booth. I don't know how they're going to do that. But you can actually say, all right, Tom Brady's going to throw 3 touchdowns today. I'm going to bet on that. Under. Yeah, all the type of prop bets you can get. And I think it'll be just a completely different experience when you're at the game. Like, you'll be out there with your kids. Hey, come on, let's go put $5 on Tom Brady as he throws 3 touchdowns. Or does the defense get 2 sacks? The other thing I think it's going to do is, from a viewing experience from your home or wherever you watch games from, maybe it's even at a sports bar, that you could actually use your remote control and say, there's a little button that says Tom Brady on your remote control while you're watching the game. Like, that's where we're headed. That's the future of where we're headed.
That's fantastic.
Everyone's celebrating it.
That's dangerous. It's absolutely
right. It's very dangerous. Everyone's celebrating it, and I think it's good, because I'd rather have it out there, monitor it, make some money off it, use it for, you know, at least good things. But I do think there's going to be some side effects, just like there was when alcohol was.
Dude, you're going to have some families just like there without will homes be with people that can't
marijuana.
Control themselves. And,
absolutely. Like, yeah. And, but it will be disproportionate. The people who are affected are lower income families,
right.
You know, that are going to be hurt the worst. And I think that's
they
a part that
are,
does.
Which is
true.
Why it's scary. Yeah.
Exactly. So and that's what I like. I don't like to talk politics, but I think I like to think of myself as a common sense person. Like, that's my political views. And I think this is common sense. Like, it is so prevalent out there already. Why don't we try to monitor it? Why don't we try to at least, you know, make sure everything's above board instead of having to meet some bookie or open a Bitcoin account
right.
to have to get paid? All right. Do you think it actually – so the NCAA, they've keep fighting it, which I completely understand. The NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball are trying to get a
Let's
piece
get
of
that
the
money.
Action.
Let's get that
exactly.
money, baby.
Exactly. They're trying to say, hey, give us an, quote, integrity
right.
tax. I don't even know if it's called a tax, an integrity payoff.
Just wetting beaks. We need to wet beaks. That's
so the governments are saying, screw you guys. That's what they're – the people that fought for this are saying, you guys prohibited this forever.
Yeah.
And you want us to turn around and pay you? I think there's still a lot left to be determined on all of this. With like the longer we go, and it's just going to be a work in progress. How does this thing iron out? How does it work? How does it impact the NCAA? Do people let you know college? Do you let you gamble on college games if you're at a college stadium? Can you do that same process?
Right.
Go outside. I hope they don't, because I'm okay with it at the NFL, NBA, professional level. I feel a little uncomfortable with it at the NCAA level. So we'll see how it all plays out. All right, big announcement from Netflix and ESPN. They have announced a new Michael Jordan documentary. How long do you think it is?
Move the needle, bro.
How long do you think
just
it is?
Just move the needle.
Move the needle
just
for an hour.
It.
Like,
yeah.
Move it, but for 10 hours. It's 10 hours.
It was, could it broke down into 10 episodes?
Like, yep.
We don't know
sounds
yet.
Like it. Probably.
Yeah.
That's my guess. Maybe 5-2 hours.
I'm so down for this. This versus Tom versus Time. Like,
well,
I
it'll blow it out of the water.
More on board.
So here's the only thing I would question.
I can't do 2 hours documentary, though, if I got to watch five of them. I can't do that.
Did you watch the OJ one?
I need hour segments.
OJ was long. Six
yeah, it was 10
right?
hours.
Oh, it was 10
hours,
I thought it was
total.
Six. I thought it was six. But yeah, it was a long one. But you kind of watched it.
I don't
it,
know that I got all the way through it, honestly. Like, cause
really?
I was, I was fired up, and I think I went two and a half, maybe three episodes in, and then it was like, who's got 2 hours to sit there and watch? I need an hour. I need 45 minutes or less.
It moves the needle, but Come Fly With Me, the original Michael Jordan documentary,
so
was
fantastic.
One of the best documentaries I've ever watched. I watched that thing 100 times. I'll watch it like before games, the night before games, get amped up. I don't know if you'll ever top that, but apparently they have like 60 hours of unseen
footage. They said
footage.
Like 500 hours.
Yeah. Whatever the number was, they went through and got unseen video.
You might have been too young for this. You were not. You remember like the video cassette? It was like the NBA superstars, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was like Mike had like the Top Gun, like dun,
yes,
dun,
yeah.
dun, 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 and Larry had the I was born in a small town.
Do you
and
remember
Chuck
Barkley?
Was the Warrior?
Yes.
Oh my God!
I had that thing on loop all the time.
It was the best.
That was the best and like best sports video.
We used to pass it around
ever.
Our teams. Like you'd be like, dog, like I need it back. I need it back.
Yes, that one moved the needle for us for sure. All right, does it move the needle? Lane Johnson. He earlier, a couple, 6 months ago after the Super Bowl, was talking about, that wasn't even that long ago, sorry, 3 or 4 months ago, was talking about the Patriots environment, and a lot of it was alluding to Chris Long, who he'd talked to, I'm sure. So he's now mad at the Patriots' arrogance. So he, quote, said, there was obviously some stuff said behind closed doors, their owner talking bleep to our owner, Bill talking bleep to our coach, Doug Peterson before the game. I'm not going to say it, but a lot of bleep kind of build up to that, and I just got tired of hearing about it, man, to be honest.
I don't care. Like, Lane,
yeah, it's kind of old news.
Like, yeah,
I was more interested when he said that they didn't have any fun because I thought that confirmed.
Fear-based.
Fear-based. Yeah. Because I already knew that. And it was kind of refreshing to hear somebody actually call him out on it.
Right.
All right. Does it move the needle? Hedge fund manager David Tepper signs a deal to buy the Panthers for $2.2 billion in cash. Like we talk about Robinson Cano, $200 million.
Damn.
This is $2.2 billion. Let me just write that
and
check.
And Kizzle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I was a little bummed that it didn't have the group with P. Diddy and Steph Curry
and
get some other guys involved to get some African American ownership. I wish that could have happened, but
I agree. But
you know,
I don't know that moves the needle. Other than $2.2 billion in cash,
right?
That's
I wonder
so
too.
Absurd.
Mark Cuban had a quote that said the gambling decision just doubled every pro team's value.
Really?
So I wonder if David Tepper's thinking, man, I wish I would have had this deal. Or
yeah,
I mean, he's thinking he got
a week
the deal.
Ago.
That, no, he got the deal. The
he
Panthers
got in
the
before,
one who got
yeah,
hosed.
Yeah,
so he got the deal locked in. All right, what's this Alabama one? You trying to troll me, Debo?
No.
Does it move the
needle?
Alabama is blocking a transfer to another SEC school. So their third-year offensive lineman, Brandon Kennedy, is interested in transferring away from Bama. They are blocking him from transferring to any SEC school. He wants to go to Auburn or Tennessee with hopes of playing right away.
That
he
sucks.
Has to appeal. I do, too. I think this does suck. I mean, if a player wants to go, he still has to sit out, right?
They won't even let him. No, because he's a grad transfer.
So they're still trying to block. See,
that sucks.
That's BS.
He's
already... It's the only thing that players have going for them, and this is why I tell them all to get their degree early,
yeah.
is you have some freedom, you have some leverage, and they're pulling that from him. If let him go. This to me makes no sense why this rule is in place.
Especially a place like Bama. Dude, you brought in five-star offensive linemen
exactly.
this year alone.
Exactly.
Like, let that man ride.
And he graduated.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, I don't get it. If he lost his job his freshman year and he was pouting and wanted to go somewhere else, maybe I don't. But even then, if a guy wants to leave, let him leave.
Correct.
All right.
A little bit of a troll, but it is an issue, as
yeah.
you guys can,
yeah, for sure.
can attest.
All right, let's finish up strong with some topics. What do you got
All
for
right.
us?
So Alex Ovechkin averaging over a point a game during his career and probably over 1,000 calories per pregame meal. Teammate Brooks Orpik shared that prior to each game, Ovi orders Mama Lucia, a pasta dish with chicken parm noodles, bread, and cheese. Quote, the type that makes you want to take a five-hour nap. It caps up 2-1, so why switch now?
Something's working. Did you have a pregame meal that you had every time?
I like pasta. Yeah, I'd have regular plain pasta, water, bread, and a little salad. That's what I had.
That was it.
How far before the game?
Let's see, if I get up from my nap, we play at 7. I probably have that around 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I was going to say the NFL pregame meals were always 4 hours before the game,
yeah.
so it was 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. You could go in a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
It was like 8 to 9 you could eat. Always the same. So they had it was always in the morning because you used to play at 1 o'clock. Yeah, there was, but you didn't have to. It was kind of open. It was like an open brunch or whatever. But it's early in the morning, but they had the same meal no matter what time you played. It was always the same options. A lot of guys had steak. I didn't like steak.
Yeah.
I would have 2 scoops of scrambled eggs, like 2 spoonfuls,
yeah.
a pancake, and some bacon.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
And you'd be good for a game.
Yeah, because I like eating a big breakfast.
Yeah.
There were times I had too much, and I was like, oh, I feel slow.
Yeah.
I can't be feeling slow. I'm already slow.
Right. What about after?
I can't be any slower.
But I had the same thing every time.
Yeah, me too.
After the game was on, wherever.
After the game, you eat whatever you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen like major carb loading after a game.
Totally.
That's typically
Well, you're starving, yeah, especially if you – but I didn't actually play much. It was just like, whatever, we can go drink some beers.
Yeah.
But if you played, like, you were famished.
We play at night. I would eat the same thing when I was at home. Like, I would eat the same thing all day. Like, the same times. Like, my ritual was, like, the same for, like, I'd leave shoot around. Like, I'd go have, like, I'd go to, like, the original House of Pancakes with my wife. I'd eat eggs and waffles, and I'd go take my nap at 11. Like, my whole day, including what I ate and drank, would be the same every day.
Yep, routine.
Back to the Pats. The Patriots couldn't get to Nick Foles in the Super Bowl, so in classic Belichick fashion, New England hiring martial arts expert Joe Kim as a pass rushing consultant. It's actually not too outside the box, though. Kim has consulted for 10 NFL teams.
I wonder if this is the dude that Aaron Donald was working out with that he
right.
had the knives out. I mean, anything you can do to get that edge.
Those real knives.
Yeah. Anything you can do to get that edge, like technique-wise, there's a lot of hand action that looks like combat when you look at offensive and defensive linemen going at it. So, absolutely, I'm all in it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Anytime you can figure out a way to push the envelope and give your guys an advantage, I think it football, basketball, whatever competitive sport you're in, like that's pretty cool that you would even make the investment in that for them. So
a Lannister always pays their debts, and so does Hugh Jackson. You get that?
Well done, sir.
You get that reference?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you guys would.
Well,
the Browns finished 1-15 in 2016, and Jackson promised they'd be better in 2017 or he'd jump in Lake Erie. They weren't. An 0-16 season means he's due to make good on that bet, and he'll do just that on June 1st with charity involved. Do you think he'd still do it if he wasn't the Browns head coach right now?
Hell no.
Like if
right?
he had gotten fired?
He wouldn't show his face in Cleveland
and
anymore.
They shouldn't, like June 1st, I mean, Lake Erie's still going to be chilly June 1st, but you should have made him do it May 1st.
Exactly. Like, no, February 1st, like right in the thick of it. Make him jump into ice cold thing. There's got to be some sort of punishment for that.
I hear that, bro. That's rough.
Hoping to raise at least $15,000 for charity, so something good comes out of it. So there's Ronnie Lott, then there's Jameson Talon. Lott cut off his finger to play. Talon willing to pee on his in order to play. The Pirates pitcher, desperate to get back on the mound, even said he'd make a sign-up sheet for teammates to urinate on his finger if it meant his cut will heal. Guys, just go. Skimming it.
Wait, why doesn't he pee on his own finger?
That's what I'm saying.
He said, but exactly. If like his urine doesn't work, like maybe try something
else.
That's
weird. Then it's just cross the line.
Because it's like, that's like an urgent thing. Like,
no,
right?
I think it actually does work. It's a medical thing.
But peeing on cuts works?
Yeah, peeing cuts, blisters. Like a lot of baseball players have blisters.
Yeah, they pee on them.
But it's used
yeah.
for urgency purposes. So to like have people sign up and like volunteer that's a little odd. Extra.
Yeah, it's a little over the
it's
top.
It's your time slot. Here you go.
It's like already healed. Like you don't need any urine on it. Like
so, you never
you
had sign up sheets.
No, there were never any sign up sheets.
Have you guys
thankfully.
Ever had? To pee on
I did when I had calluses from playing baseball. Yeah, absolutely.
That's
breaking
crazy.
News.
It's always
disgusting.
Like the jellyfish story. Like if you get bit by a jellyfish, right. Which I did.
And you
but
did?
I was so little, I don't remember. Yeah. Somebody probably peed.
Now you know. Now you know
like
if it happens.
Probably peed. I don't know.
I feel like it'd be harder for a girl.
I've gotten bit by jellyfish so much.
You're not scarred by it, so that's good.
I feel like it'd be harder for a girl to aim. But that's just
no, it's impossible. You'd have to have someone else.
All right. Two more topics. Mike D'Antoni's wife says she's sometimes jealous of her husband's relationship and the way he talks about James Harden. Think she was ever jealous of you, Raja?
No, but funny. It kind of ties into this story. Her name's Laurel.
No way.
Yeah, her
no
name's
way.
Laurel.
Absolutely. It's Laurel. I bet she hears Laurel, too.
She's the sweetest
she
man.
She probably hears Yanni.
Their family's great. But look, that's part of Mike D'Antoni's, like, it's part of his brilliance is the relationships that he develops with guys. And the look, dude, he just empowers you. He just makes you feel like you're probably a better player and you're better at what you do than you really are. And he makes you feel like that. And like I always will have love for Mike, for Dan D'Antoni, for Laurel. Like their family's just been great to my family. And Mike, quite frankly, like helped me get over a hurdle as a player in my career. And so no matter what, I don't care if Houston loses tonight.
Right.
I don't give a damn. I'm always riding with Mike and Laurel.
Yeah, you got Laurel's back. All right, speaking of spousal stuff.
Yeah.
Did you see what happened to Lucas Glover at the TPC Sawgrass? So they were playing. The PGA Tour was there. He had a pretty decent start to the weekend. Didn't finish the way he wanted to. So he's renting a house. I'll be interested to see what Hannah thinks of this too. So he's renting a house in Ponte Vedra, a nice neighborhood. He's hanging out with his wife and his kids and his mother-in-law after. His wife had been drinking all day. This is in the police report. Mm-hmm. She starts berating him, screaming at him, calling him the P word, telling him if he doesn't play better, she's going to leave him and his kids will never see him again. Just so the cops were called.
Yep.
She gets arrested. There's a mugshot now out there. If you have a wife like this, how do you stay with her? Especially in your profession where it's a lot of mental confidence between
enough.
The head. It's already hard enough. And now you've got your wife who sounds like she's a little bit off a rocker, or at least when she's intoxicated.
Yeah.
How do you go on with your career and try to get over this? I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I can't. I don't think it's with her. I mean, like,
right.
If you're only with me because you thought I was going to be a really, really good golfer and I'm not living up to your expectations, I probably shouldn't be with you in the first place, you know? And then the rest of it is just...
So he had scratches on his arm. His mother-in-law had scratches on his arm. Like, there was a physical altercation. That's why she was arrested. They said, because Lucas Glover tried to talk him out of it. He's like, no. He's like, this happens all the time.
Right.
Which is,
you
that
know
speaks
that
volumes
the
about the relationship.
Once, right.
But this is a abusive situation. Mm-hmm. If the roles were flipped, if this was a guy doing this and the girl was the competitor, there would be complete outrage. Like, I'm wondering where... are the moral police on this one. Like, there should be some accountability for this one from some level that we won't hear from.
I agree. I have a friend who, he's in the NFL, and his wife I grew up with, and they met in college, and she always gets mad at him if he doesn't play well. Like, she will kind of give him the silent treatment, like, won't really, like, she'll be like, I thought you should have done better. Like,
what position does he play?
No,
it's too obvious. Because I would say, like, how does she know unless it's a quarterback?
I think it's just because they met so long ago,
you
and
would
that's
know.
Why.
Oh, really?
So, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, I.
My wife, we would have been long done because I would play it so bad. She would have been mad at me all the time.
Well, that I don't even agree with because I just feel like I would want to avoid. I mean, I grew up being a Bills fan, right? Like, my brothers didn't even talk to us.
Yeah, you feel bad
as
well. That's your family's supposed to be your support staff.
You're supposed to come home and be able to cry if you need to.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Yes. So
messed up.
I think, like, the aggression is way overboard.
Right.
Like, that should be, no.
Any of it. You need to back your man.
He needs to.
Or you need to back your woman.
That's correct.
Partnership.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sides.
All right. Let's wrap it up because we got to get out of here.
I just want to know, can Raja, can you throw a baseball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's up?
No, I can throw a baseball.
We saw Charles Barkley the other night. We just see other athletes from other sports that can't handle
it. It is the most annoying thing in the world for me. And I've had teammates that I've invited to come play like in softball leagues with us and stuff, because we'll play like co-ed softball. And watching them try to catch like a pop fly or – you can tell it's embarrassing. I'm like, dude, no one ever.
It's so embarrassing.
If you're a professional athlete, you should be proficient in at least four sports.
Absolutely.
Period.
Yeah,
like, you should be proficient.
I would do it like the combines. I would say, all right, let me see you throw a baseball.
Correct.
Let me see you shoot a basketball. Yep. Like, let me see you do some other things athletically.
No doubt.
If you don't have that type of coordination, I don't want you on my team.
I'm with you, bro.
Yeah, this is a new test at the combine. All right, that's a wrap for us today. Thanks for checking us out. Make sure you go follow us and subscribe on iTunes. In the review section, leave us a 5-star review. Ask us a question there, and we'll get to it on Fridays when we do our 5-star Q&A. And as always, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Kanell and Bell.